Welcome back to RCR Talk. Here with Marie and joining me today is Kevin Joyce, founder and owner of Marlborough Wine Limited, otherwise known as MWL, which we'll refer it to just to keep things nice and simple today. It's a family-owned winery and been in the wine industry for 20 years, produces wines from all over New Zealand's top wine regions, including some of my favourites. MWL's major brands include Toi Toi, Cooper's Creek and State Land, as well as others. Kevin, it's so good to see you. I caught up with you in December and it's great to talk to you here on RCR Talk. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you, Marie. It's nice to be here and it's nice to be part of the RCR community for sure.
Absolutely. And as Kevin and I discovered, because of course I have a fondness for the wine industry and have done for 30 odd years, so it was always great for you and I to talk shop back in December. All the way then, and we thought it would be great for our listeners to actually hear a little bit more about MWL. And firstly, what brought you to the RCR community?
Oh, look, you know, we all went through some really troubling times during the lockdowns and the COVID crisis, so-called COVID crisis. But, you know, I think the first thing that hit me is then all of a sudden Jacinda decided to mandate everything and saying, well, hang on, we no longer had a personal choice anymore, you know. And I just listened to it on the TV and I just fell off my chair and thought, well, you know, what are we, the dictatorship, you know. And then there were so many of my friends and things fell into lockstep with that, you know, and I thought, you know, this is just not right. You know, we need to make the decisions we want for our own bodies and our own families and our own communities. You know, we're not to be dictated by some centralized government. So that's basically, and I was quite alone, you know, at that stage. And then all of a sudden RCR or VFF, it was Voices for Freedom, that came up. And all of a sudden I realized there was other people out there with the same like mind as me, and we're fighting for our rights and our freedoms. And so it just sort of grew from there. So I've been an avid supporter of Voices for Freedom and Avid and also RCR, you know, right from it started. So and you know, as a, you know, we own this wine company and we'd love to be able to do something back for our RCR members as well and give them a couple of good deals, which we'll talk about later in the show, I'm sure.
So everyone, make sure you hang around for that, because Kevin has got a very generous offer for us all. Now, the wine industry, as I said, near and dear to my heart. How are things looking at the moment? How important is the wine industry to New Zealand? Now, I live here in Hawke's Bay, so it is massively important, but I don't think a lot of people truly appreciate how impactful a successful wine industry is for a successful New Zealand. So tell us more about that.
Look, it's huge. It's huge, Marie. You know, it sort of affects our social and economic footprint. It's hugely significant. You know, if you think about it, it's our fifth largest export now, New Zealand's fifth largest export. It's sort of 87% exported, 13% domestic sales all around the world. It's a 2.1 billion export revenue, which is 308 million litres that we export. So it's pretty hard to imagine what 308 million litres looks like, but if you turn it into bottles, that's 411 million bottles. You turn it into containers, that's some 24,000 40-foot containers that are shipped out of New Zealand every year to the world. It's pretty huge. But besides that sort of the revenue that comes in from that income, you know, it also employs a lot of people in the industry. You know, there's over 40,000 hectares of vineyards spread right through the country from the top to the bottom. In all regions, you know, including Southland, including Northland. You know, 1400 and wineries in New Zealand, so it's quite diverse and with all different styles and wines and brand stories. It creates 12,000 jobs, you know, so 12,000 related jobs in the wine industry. So it's a big employer of the wine industry. Of the country. The other thing that it does, it contributes a lot of money into the government's coffers. You know, they charge excise tax on domestic sales, not on exports, but on domestic sales, which is equivalent to about $2.81 per bottle. So when you buy it, it's $2.81 per bottle of excise in each of those bottles. But then, of course, there's GST on top of that as well. That's about, if you add the GST, that's about $335 million that goes into the government's coffers. And it doesn't go back to the industry, it just goes into the consolidated fund. So it's not actually helping, helping the industry. It's helping New Zealand, obviously, but it is just a sort of a revenue gathering exercise by the government. We've got I guess the top wineries and so well that's probably the major things that it is pretty significant in the way it impacts everybody's lives throughout the country.
Oh yeah, no, it's huge. And as I said, I'm here in Hawke's Bay. I grew up in Gisborne. I mean, the wine industry has been integral in both of those regions for my entire life. And you mentioned exports before. I mean, exports are huge. I actually sent you probably, I hope you saw it. I sent a photograph through. I was in Hong Kong, and the toi toi that you've got over your shoulder was sitting there in a wee supermarket in Hong Kong. I was so excited and flicked it, took a photo, took a selfie of the wine and sent it back. Now but that's not your Asia isn't your biggest export market. Is it still the US? It used to be traditionally the US and the UK were our big exporters.
Well, if you look at it from an NWL point of view, then we export to about 20 countries throughout the world. But if you look at the industry of the whole, then the biggest market is the US. The US has about 36% of our total export volume goes into the US. It used to be the UK, but the UK now is only let's just have a look at the numbers. The UK is 20% of our volume, and Australia is 17%, and Canada is 8%. So those are the top four markets that we supply to, and that's totals 81% of our exports. The other big markets are bigger markets are Germany, which is 48 million that goes there. That's 2.3% of the total volume. China's 2%. Ireland is 2%, and Singapore is 1.2%. So, and the rest make up the rest. So, those four countries, of USA, UK, Australia, and Canada are our big markets. So, anything that happens in those markets or the trade routes, is really going to impact our industry hugely.
So the tariffs, I mean, I guess that's been one of the hot topics of conversation for wine exporters, the tariffs into the US. Will you get hit by those tariffs, or is it a wait and see?
Well, they had a meeting. New Zealand Wine Growers had a meeting with all its members recently, just sort of discuss that and what they were getting through the diplomatic channels. It's a wait and see at the moment, right? We just don't know. But Trump has sort of said he'd put a 10% tariff on everything. We're not quite sure whether that's 10% more on what we existing pay, because we already pay about $3.20 for each case that goes into the US at the moment. So is it 10% on top of that, or is it 10% on the FOB value? If it's on the CIF value, it would be, because they include freight into it as well. But if it's just 10% increase, then it's probably about 5 cents a bottle extra cost into the US. If they put 10% onto the CIF value, then you're looking at about that'll put an extra four, which is 42 cents a bottle, right? So that's in cost. So once you put on the margins and state taxes, etc., it's probably an extra dollar a bottle that goes onto the retail price in the US. I'm talking US dollars there. So that probably is pretty significant in terms of stemming demand in the US. So yeah, I think it'd have quite a significant impact in terms of volume.
Absolutely. And do you guys, I know this, do you work as the wine growers with your other export sort of partners like New Zealand Beef and Lamb and some of the fruit growing to sort of work together to ensure as a trade bloc with foreign affairs and our trade ministries to make sure that we can minimise anything like this? Are those discussions ongoing?
Well, New Zealand Wine Growers sort of represents the whole industry, both growers and also the wineries. So we are one voice, that's one advocacy voice for the whole industry, which is really good. And they do have the ear of the minister and the government. I guess Trade and Enterprise is the other organisation that does have an impact on trying to sort of promote New Zealand produce internationally. So we do work quite closely with them, and ourselves, NWL, does have a few projects we're working with them to try and increase demand internationally, but not specifically in terms of working with the other partners. Look, I'm not too sure whether New Zealand Wine does talk to them. I'm sure they do, but yeah, but it's such a big industry that there's a hell of a lot to talk about us and try and push our brand internationally as well.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed in the Herald a week or so ago, there was an article talking about how the consumption of wine is dropping and higher alcohol and volume of craft beer is up. How is the industry as a whole? Because I know it has changed dramatically in the sort of 30 odd years that I have been involved with it in one form or another. Is it in good shape?
Well, look, it's cyclical, right? Because it's very much dependent on the weather and very much dependent on the climate. And in one year you get one good vintage, and the next year you get a low crop, lad. But it does it's impacted from that quite significantly, because you only get your stock once a year, right? So we had a, I don't know, 2021, I think it was, we had a very low harvest, and it put a major issue in the industry that we couldn't supply demand. Then COVID came along, and it sort of stemmed demand a little bit. It affected the trade routes. We went out of stock on the shelves and what have you. And then the vintage 22 came along with a huge vintage, and sort of made up. So people stocked up quite a bit of that because they were short. Then we had a pretty good average vintage in 23, which basically didn't sell because everybody had a lot of 22 stock. And then 23 came along as well, which was probably about slightly above average, I suppose. So all of a sudden it filled up the tanks, and that 24 vintage hasn't sold at the moment. So we've turned from an undersupply into an oversupply in the market. And of course, we've seen the international market dropping 7%, domestically 7% as well, in terms of overall volume, all varieties. It's been a bit of a rocky road, in that we've got oversupply, we've got reducing demand, we've got increasing costs with inflation, and just the costs of bottling and distribution, everything's going up. Regulations are coming in terms of people trying to control you with climate change, and what you can put on and what you can't put on. So yeah, it's warm, and that have come together to probably going to really affect the profitability of the industry, both growers and wineries, to be fair.
Yeah, come on, come on. There's got to be some good news, Kevin.
Well, there was good news actually, because Sauvignon Blanc, it's 80, I think it's 87% of our exports, right? So it's huge, and most of that comes out of Marlborough, but it is Sauvignon Blanc in the other parts of the country as well. Still in demand internationally, right? It's still a product. New Zealand can grow Sauvignon Blanc with that sort of, the expression, the linear, the acidity in it, the what I call the fruit burst, that nobody else in the world can produce, right? So we have that advantage. So I guess as inflation comes down, then hopefully that demand will pick up again, and Sauv Blanc will come back into vogue. So it's probably a blip in the industry, I hope. I think the long-term future is still reasonably good. We don't want all of a sudden these climate change people, then they're pulling out vines or something like that, because they well they don't they actually absorb carbon from the atmosphere, not let it out, so it's a bit stupid that we have to try and restrict that really, but that's
Well,
another
looking
issue,
at,
I suppose.
yeah, well, now, so let's have a look at some of those little headwinds, because I know that one of the ones we've been talking about here on RCR has been this gene technology bill. Now, if you were to believe Judith and now Dr. Retty, that this would be a wonderful thing for our industries, our primary industries. It will allow us a certain amount of dynamism and technology to aid what has traditionally been fantastic. But you're there on the ground. You're talking to growers. You are creating businesses with this primary industry. What's the feeling there around this gene technology bill? Will it aid the industry, in your opinion, or hurt it?
Yeah, well, it's a bit It's hard to know because it's come on to us really quickly without a lot of time to be able to go to the market and double check that. But before they closed off submissions, which really was wrong, wasn't it? Because everybody's on holiday and they're trying to get some significant significant impact on our industry and all the agricultural industry, to be fair. Because really, what New Zealand is looking at, is looked at internationally, is it's a clean, clean and green image. People see it as natural, and we're no exception in the wine industry. We always look to see ourselves as being natural. There's my worry would be is, we're going to become a free-for-all, and all of a sudden there's all sorts of GMOs that are introduced into our food chain, and this bull doesn't have any labeling or anything like that. There's no
No.
control. So I have some concerns, but the New Zealand wine did make a submission as well, and I did get a copy of that. And it might be interesting if I just read out what they had to say about it as in a summary. They said, overall, New Zealand wine supports the objectives of the Gene Technology Bill. However, this is conditional on the key risk to the New Zealand's trade environments arrangement, sorry, and profile being addressed in the bill. Importantly, this support is not implicit endorsement of technologies yet to be assessed, nor support of higher risk gene modification techniques. There are varying views amongst our membership on this bill, from strong support to opposition, and submit that an effective framework must be in place to allow New Zealand an informed conversation on the risks and benefits of gene technologies. They went on to say that the current framework is antiquated, inefficient, and can act as a barrier to the safe use of potentially beneficial technology. So New Zealand supports the limited, sorry, New Zealand's wine of support is limited to the lower risk gene editing techniques, which can produce naturally occurring traits and that are not distinguishable from the conventional selective breeding. But we do a lot of selective breeding of different clones and putting those into the environment or into our vineyards. But New Zealand wine does not support the higher risk genetic modification techniques such as transgenics involving the use of foreign DNA. The new gene editing techniques using CRISPR can lead to greater climate resilience, biosecurity protection, and environmental outcomes, and potentially lower production costs for viticulture. So I guess the bill must sort of really account for the broader risk that we're going to when considering the gene technologies, I think. And we've got to make sure that protection is in place before we go down this route. And it's the bill at the moment seems very lax on in that regard. Otherwise,
Yeah,
it
and
might
if it
damage our markets, you know.
absolutely, and if anyone wants more information around that, Rachel, you have a look at the RCR360 documentary that Alastair Harding did. I helped co-host, and there's a lot of information in there and concerns. We spoke to John Carapiet from GE Free New Zealand, and he had a lot of good points to say. And that's the difficulty too, because I mean, comparatively in New Zealand's position in the international market, I mean, what do your competitors do? Do they have this genetic modification in Australia, in the United States, in Canada, in the UK?
Well, we're certainly not asking for it, and we can create a lot of damage in the market if all of a sudden we have to put on our labels in the EU, for example, that we've got GMO clones in there, right? That could be quite devastating because one of the factors that we look at is obviously people like brands and they like the price and what have you, but that environmentally friendly sustainability is a big thing. The other bit of the gene technology bill that I'm concerned about is they appointing a single arbiter there. They've got one person that's appointed by the government, not elected, right? It's his appointment. So and we've seen what happens when the government wants to make a single statement, previously with COVID, So I would be concerned a bit about that appointment and whether he says this is okay, this is not okay. Maybe there needs to be a committee of three, with different people, so at least they're not just this powers in one the hands of one person, it's a worrying concern, I guess. I think we need to be very careful. And there's another thing that's happening in the industry as well, and they've been doing research for 3 years on it, Marie, which is using nanotechnology. They're using nanotechnology in the sprays and those sorts of things. And they're feeling that they can, get to those diseases a little bit better with this nanotechnology. Well, we need to make sure that that's correct and not going to affect things as well. So that's only research, but that's research that the New Zealand Wine is doing at the moment. There's been a 3-year program on that, which will come back from the University of Auckland, I think it is.
Yeah, with one thing that is certainly never changes is that there's change. So there's a lot to sort of stay abreast of. But let's talk about things that are more like that are quite exciting. Let's talk about some of the wines because you've got a few of my absolute favourites, and one of the ones, firstly, that I want to talk about is a wine that I love, and a lot of people I think don't know about it because it is a varietal. I have a fondness. I spoke to you about this in December. I have a fondness for varietal whites, and Cooper's Creek Bellringer Albarino. It's from the Gisborne Bell Vineyard, which I know well, but it's just right around the corner from my parents' place, as I told you. It's a wonderful wine, and I love it because if you're somebody who wants an alternative to Sauvignon Blanc, you want to try something different, and Chardonnay isn't your jam, rosé is not quite for you, Albarino provides you with the ability to serve it and drink it with all those things that you would Sauvignon Blanc, like seafood and chicken and salads and summer, and it's just absolutely delicious. How is that? I mean, how is the current vintage looking at the moment? Is it yum?
I'm not too sure about the current vintage because that's probably just about to be harvested shortly. But just stepping back a little bit, if you look at the Albarino as a variety, it actually comes from the northwest of Spain, from the Basque Country. Is it Basque Country? Yeah, I think it is. And the northern parts of Portugal, right? So it's very it has a good acidity, a good sort of length of acidity, and it's similar to Sauvignon Blanc. I look at it and say, well, if you like Sauvignon Blanc and you like Pinot Gris, then you'll like Albarino, right? It's sort of in the middle of those two. It has a sort of a great line of one of the chalkiness, so it gives you a sort of an interesting palate weight, slightly different to Sauvignon Blanc. Still has that line of acidity and the citrus coming through. A little bit of apricot, lemon peel, that sort of stuff. Jasmine, you get some quite good sort of aromatics coming through. And the particular one that we're looking at, one we're selling at the moment, is a 2020 vintage, right? So it's got sort of 3, 4 years in bottle in it, and we're finding that the Albarino with the acidity in it will last quite a while. And we're finding that the hues are going to color the whole wine softening, and it's starting to drink really well with that age on it.
I actually purchased some when I was in actually Salvador a couple of months ago, and it had that lovely candy peel flavour to it that you get with a little bit of bottle age. It was utterly delicious. It was so good.
Sam Kim, who's a winemaker with Wine Orbit, he had this to say about it. Let me just quote that. It's elegantly fruited and fragrant on the nose, showing apricot, lemon peel, jasmine, and olive notes. Palate is beautifully weighted, delivering delicate fruit intensity, well supported by fine texture and bright acidity, well structured and lingering with a crisp, dry finish. Michael Cooper, Sam rated that 94.5 stars. Cameron Douglas, who's a master of wine, he rated it 93 points. He's a master sommelier, not a master of wine. So he pairs it with food, and so it's 93 points out of 100. So that's a pretty good rating. And even Michael Cooper said, it's going to drink best from sort of 2024 onwards. So I think now is the ideal time. So that's for your listeners, it's the Cooper's Creek Bellringer 2020, Gisborne Albarino, and that normally sells for about $21 a bottle, in retail. But we're going to do a special deal for the members on that
Yeah,
one.
we are. And also too, rosé. I mean, that's been the hot ticket. Gosh, I remember when I first started back in the industry. I mean, you couldn't give the stuff away. Now it's all about the rosé. You see it on the trendiest lunch tables at every cafe and restaurant. And you've got a really delicious one, the Sarah's rosé. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, look, I never thought I'd say this, but I'm a rosé drinker as well. It's just sort of one of those refreshing wines that you can have, as an afternoon or even at lunch, or even as an aperitif before dinner. And I just you don't want a heavy red, and you don't want the acidity that you're going to get out of it, some of the Sauvignon Blancs and things like that. So the rosé just fits in perfectly. So yeah, Sarah's rosé. Sarah's my wife, right? So it's named after her. And I have to give her full credit for this because she sort of, when she's from the UK and she loved her rosés, but a Provence style rosés when she was in the UK. She's been out here 40 years or more now. But when we set up, she says, "Can you make me a Provence style rosé?" And we said, "Yes, we certainly can." And so the winemakers got together and we've made this rosé out of it's pretty much 97% Pinot Gris. And Pinot Noir, right? So that's the base of it, and then a little bit of extra colouring if we need it for Merlot, which is probably the extra 3%. So it's a pretty interesting style, it's soft, it's gentle, it's got a it's summer fruits basically, strawberries and pear and floral nose, rose really on the nose. It's full body, but it's gentle. It's got a softness on the palate. It finishes pleasing with a fruit sweetness and a freshness that just leaves lingers in your mouth and keeps going. So we're pretty pleased. That's a 2024 vintage. We tend to sort of get those out to the market sooner because it's a sort of younger wine that we drink. So that's pretty much all from Hawke's Bay too. All those Pinot Noir and the Pinot Gris comes out of Hawke's Bay. So that's up the Motio vineyard down there in Hawke's Bay.
Yeah, and for the red lovers, I know you've got a Central Otago Pinot Noir in the Tui
Well,
Tui, and
just
you've
before I
also.
move off that one, that's sort of $18 a bottle as a normal price. So we are going to do a special price on that one as well.
We are, and because I want to get to the deal, so we'll have a look. We've also got the Central Otago Pinot Noir and the Syrah here, a Hawke's Bay Syrah with Cooper's Creek, and Tui Tui is with the Central Otago Pinot Noir. Now, in terms of that Pinot Noir, yours is exceptionally good value, I have to say, because sometimes Pinot Noir, I think it was it Michael Cam. Was it Michael Campbell that one, Bob Campbell once said, "There's no such thing as good cheap Pinot Noir. It's either good Pinot Noir or cheap Pinot Noir." But you have, I
Right.
think, got a very good value Pinot Noir because it's got lots of those berry characteristics, which are actually delicious, and some of the refinement that you get from Central Otago. But it's not going to, you're not going to have to sell an organ in order to pay for it.
Well, Central Otago is like Melbourne in a way, in that it's a unique climate. It produces a Pinot Noir that's pretty unique to the world, really. Obviously, you've heard about the Californian Pinot Noirs or out of Oregon more particularly. Australia, I think they can do a Pinot Noir, but I haven't really tasted a really good one out of this. Some of Tasmania are actually doing not so bad, but Central Otago with that cool climate, you get very, very hot in the day and you're cool at night. So it has that long intensity. So it has a long ripening. Usually it's the last grapes we bring into the winery, probably late April, early May. We've just harvested our Chardonnay out of Hawke's Bay just on Monday, so that's now in tank. So it's 2 months later. So it rates an intensity. So it has a thicker skin because of that coolness. So when you make a Pinot Noir, all the colour comes out of the skin. The juice obviously inside of it is just clear. So that thicker skin gives you a bit of colour in your Pinot. So you'll see that the Pinot Noirs have got a little bit more colour in them. But because of Central Otago's on that, all that got that stiff bones down there, basically the vines are growing in those stones. So you get a metallic sort of a very much a sort of a mineral sort of flavour into the wine. So which I love. So you get that acidity, you've got the aging, and you usually they're stressing those stones so that they produce a pretty interesting Pinot Noir. And our one, our Clutha Pinot Noir, comes off our Clutha vineyard. That's in the Pisa area of central Otago, just on the State Highway 6, just in between Wanaka and Cromwell. And we do supplement that from a vineyard down in Clyde as well, which is on the river down there, pretty much. So that Pinot Noir, I think, is a 2023 vintage. There might be still some 2022 on the shelves, but if you buy it from our website, I think it's a 2023 vintage at the moment. Normally $28 a bottle. We're going to do a deal on that for you as well. Just talking about the wine, it's probably a lot of plum. Got a cranberry coming through there. You've got that mineral shrimpiness that I talked about. There's a sort of a hint of vanilla and sort of, oak influence that comes from the barrels. These are all barrel fermented and a mixture of barrel and tank fermented. It's a delicate touch of oak, that you get, not overpowering, it's very silky and refined, I guess is what you call it. So if you love your Pinots, this will be one which you'll love, and it's not overly priced at $28, You
No,
need a
it isn't.
reserve one, which is over $50, but that's really handcrafted, hand-picked, and what have you.
Well, all this talk, of course, is getting us thirsty. Now, you've got a really amazing deal for all our RCR listeners. So tell us about that deal. And if you're a Foundation Member Club member, you've also got an even extra special deal for you. And you're also doing a really generous rebate offer as well back to us here at RCR. So fill us in on that, Kevin, because it's so important.
Yes, well, we are. So we've gone to our website, which is, mwl.co.nz, and just click on buy wines. You'll see our full range there, and there's a huge range. With the Toi Toi brand we've talked about, the Cooper's Creek brand, which we bought 2.5 years ago, is now part of our MWL portfolio. There's the Stateland wines that you mentioned there, which is Ruud Maasdam, who's a Dutchman that created and handcrafted. He still goes into the winery and buzzes thing. A lot of barrel fermented Chardonnays and Pinot Noirs, and as well as Sauvignon Blanc as well, and Maker as well. So they're all there. And you just need to, when you go through to the checkout, there'll be a coupon code there that you can put into that. And if you put in RCR15, so that's go to the website, mwl.co.nz, go to the checkout and put RCR15 in the coupon code, and that will give you a 15% discount of all of those wines, and including the ones we've talked about. There's one we haven't talked about, though, Marie, which is our Chardonnay, which you call our Limerick Chardonnay, which comes out of Hawke Bay in Middle Road, probably not far from here. I'm not quite sure where you live in Hawke's Bay, but that vineyard is, well, it's pretty much a limestone quarry, really, because right next door to it is a quarry. There's a limestone quarry, and so there's big chunks of limestone in the vineyard, and the Chardonnay really loves limestone. So that creates a sort of a pretty different sort of a Chardonnay vineyard experience. It's really is sensational, and it's rated sort of 94 points by Sam Quinn, we mentioned before. And so that's available there as well. I think that's a 2021 vintage, but we're in transition, and I think we're just about to move to the 2023. We didn't come up to quality in 2022 with the floods and the flames and the floods and the rain and what have you. That's priced. It's priced at $24 a bottle. Obviously, with the 15% discount, that will reduce it down. What we thought would be quite good for your listeners, Marie, is that we could, if everybody wanted to try one of those wines we've talked about, then maybe we could add in the Hawke's Bay Syrah you mentioned, and also maybe a Toi Toi Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough, and make a six pack, a mixed six pack. And so we'll put that up on our website, and we'll call it the RCR six pack, right? RCR mixed pack. And we'll put one of each of those wines in it. And that's a sort of 100 for that pack, less the 15%, of course. So that's pretty good value for putting all those wines together.
Just to reiterate for the listeners, so that is a six pack, which are the four wines we talked about, the rosé, the albarino, the pinot noir, throwing in also a sauvignon blanc and a syrah for $120 every day. But that RCR15 code at checkout will give you 15% off that, as well as any other wine that you want on the web. So the only key is it needs to be a minimum of six bottles, obviously, to make your freight. Now, Foundation Members Clubs, I did mention something for you. If you sign into your Foundation Members Club page, you will find another code there just for you, which will give you a little bit more sugar on top. So that's the code you want to be using. So if you are a Foundation Members Club, sign into your page to grab that coupon code and you just pop it in at checkout. And of course, for everything that you purchase from MWL, so that's mwl.co.nz, you will also be supporting both MWL and you will be supporting RCR because there will be a rebate back to RCR as well, which Kevin is very, very generous of you, and we certainly do appreciate that support.
Yeah, but what we're going to do there, Marie, we'll let everybody know is that if they, if every, every, by the way, the freight is included in that price, so that's freight free delivered to your door. You can obviously order multiple packs, whatever you want, but that's freight free as long as you order those six bottles. And what we're going to do, all of the sales that come through using those codes, either the members code, which you can get from the back end, which gives you a better discount, and or the RCR 15, then we are going to contribute as a contribution to RCR to help your coffers 15% on the value of those wines, excluding the GST and the freight. So 15% will be contributed to RCR to help you run the show and provide the fantastic content that you do. It's just
Oh,
fantastic. I really
it
love
is
it.
so greatly appreciated. As I said, mwl.co.nz. Have a look at the website, have a look at some of those wines there. And Kevin, it's been a great joy to catch up with you again. It has been fun. And as I said, this is something near and dear to my heart, certainly. And I'm sure we will talk to you again, especially once the vintage is coming. You and I might need to catch up on that. So thank you so much for your time today.
It's been lovely to talk with Maria, and I think I'd love to come back as well and maybe offer some different wines as the winter comes on, but also give you an update on the industry from time to time, because it is significant in our economy and to our communities as well.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. This has been Kevin Joyce from MWL. And remember, mwl.co.nz is the website here on RCR Talk. Thank you for your time today, Kevin.
Very much.